Okay, wow. So we're here. Welcome to episode one of the Relentless Diaries. I'm your host, Zoe. Oh, we're going to cheers in case you hear that. I'm your host, Zoe, and I'm here with one of my best friends, M. Christelle, a.k.a. MC, a.k.a. Marie Zolkirishaka.
Yeah.
Can I say your full name?
Yeah, literally perfect. That's my whole Gavi. Are we going to edit that out or...
I think it doesn't matter.
Let's just take that part out. Said first name, middle name, and last name. What?
Yo. Anyways, yeah, we'll take that part out. But yeah. No, I'm excited to be here. First podcast, episode one. I think everyone's been encouraging me to use my voice further than Twitter. If you follow me on Twitter, you know I'm an active tweeter.
Plug it
that's
in.
A word. Plug my at. Put my ad in. At ZX Shania with two A's, so ZX Shania. Yeah, so you follow me on Twitter. I'm pretty vocal. I have a lot of opinions, and kind of through current circumstances, I've been super vocal about the Black Lives Matter movement. And I think that's what kind of I've always been a vocal person, and I think people just said, "Yo, we need to hear your voice." Through another channel, like start a podcast, start a blog, start a YouTube. YouTube's not my thing. I'm not the person to talk to a camera. I also don't like to wear makeup recently. So we're going to stick to a podcast, and I think this will be cool to start, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
So yeah, want to talk about yourself?
Yeah. Well, I'm honored to be here. I'm happy to be the first guest, mm-hmm. you know. My name is Marie, or MC to my friends. Me and Zoe are just friends. I don't even know how we met each
just
other.
Just friends.
What the fuck? This is also one of my best friends, but I mean, like, you know how you're like, we didn't go to high school together. Yeah. We didn't meet in college. Like, I don't know, but we're just homies, you know?
We met through Cam.
Right. We met through another friend, but like, we've gone on trips together. I met your whole family, mm-hmm. all that stuff. I don't know. I've always been vocal as well. And I think it's important to have these conversations. And I realized recently, like me, you and our friend group always have these convos like mm-hmm. all the time.
And we wish we record them.
I know.
And we never do. We're like, we need a reality show where someone just record our voices because we say the most wild shit. But the realest shit.
I know. Hopefully this time will be less wild because like
people are listening. Jobs. And we have jobs and like, people jobs. Might know who we are. So
yeah, but I'm honored to be here. And obviously we're talking about a topic that is just always prevalent, but like especially right now. So I mean, not to get too heavy already, but
no, get heavy. Let's get in. That's what we're here for.
We're Black, and we're talking about being Black and being Black in the North American context specifically. Mm-hmm. You know, dealing with being othered in daily instances at work. And then obviously it's even worse with police or any figure of authority. So that's what we're here to talk about, and I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so not to just dive into things, but yeah, like you said, I feel like the last few weeks have been heavy, and we've been talking so much about everything under the sun. It's super personal for me, only because if you know me, I have so many little cousins. Most of them are male.
Yep.
So the fight that I'm fighting, I really think is for them. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy to me that we went to school and we were taught, you know, slavery's over. It was abolished and we came so far. You know, we can be in the same classrooms. We can drink from the same fountains. And
that used to actually be illegal.
No, exactly. That's what I mean. So it's like they teach us in school, you know, like Black History Month, all these great things and how far we've come. And then I'm sitting here at 23 years old and it's like, I don't think nothing has changed, like, at all. It's just changed in a different aspect. You know what I mean? Like, we're not slaves, but we're slaves to the system. So Amen. That's the biggest problem. And I was saying the other day, I'm like looking at the pictures on like Complex on Instagram of like the protests and people pouring milk in their eyes, and there's kids and they're like soaking them with like water and baking soda. I'm like, these pictures look like they were taken in 1940 or, you know, 19, whatever slavery was happening. 1940. Right.
No, slavery was way like before. 1800. I should know the date. 1850, right? Because there's that song.
Okay. Not as, I don't mean like pictures of slavery. I mean pictures of like the protests and people fighting. Like, that's what I mean referencing.
Give,
so
give
like,
context to how not long ago that is. That's 150 years ago. That's right. Two 75-year-old women back
yeah.
to back.
Yeah.
Oh. That's not that many generations.
Exactly.
You know? I think that's a good point.
Yeah. So yeah, my point is that I'm seeing pictures that are taken in 2020. That look very similar to the pictures, yeah, that Clyde was saying, that were taken like 150 years ago. Like I said, it wasn't that long ago, and it's hitting close to home. So I think we have to push, man. Like, that's the only thing. We have to push. We have to push for our future generation, our kids, even though we don't have any yet. If we do have them, that's what we're fighting for. And I think it's big now. So one thing I really want to talk about first is, like I said, if you follow me on Twitter, I'm very vocal. The family meeting. Ooh. That was hosted yesterday. So
I couldn't get in. That club was exclusive as hell. Club was outside, I know somebody in there. Let me in. Damn, we got promoter. A bottle.
I know the DJ. My name is on guest list. Hello.
Like, what the hell? Is it my outfit? Like, damn. It's not because I'm black.
Honestly.
Like,
so from my point of view, like, my whole perspective on the day was I got a text message from Sherry, and Sherry was one of the organizers of the family meeting. So she texted me in the morning and she was like, hey, if you're free tonight, we're having a family meeting. And in my head, I was like, okay, family meeting. And she sent me the flyer and it was, you know, like, family meeting, you know, come talk.
Right.
Like let's make amends, you know, all that stuff, 8 p.m. Zoom. So I was like, okay, this is cool. And she was like, yeah, it's open forum. And I was like, open.
For context, this is for, like, the Toronto black community. That's, like, Toronto Twitter in itself is, like, a little world of its own. I think I saw a tweet that said it's, like, a cult. Like,
I wouldn't say a cult,
but, like, it's a world of its own. 100%. So it explains why having that type of forum actually drew out a crowd, you know? It wasn't just, like, 10 people that interact with
each
other.
There were 100 people in that Zoom, and that was, like, capacity. So I really wonder what the real number would have been if everyone at the same time was allowed to enter.
At least 2 times or 3 times. Even, you like, so? You got to account for people that just wanted to be in that, you know?
Low-key, like, there are just some people just snuck it through the back, like, I'm just here to
see
watch.
What's going on, see if there's going to be any drama. I mean, you obviously don't hope for that, but you know there's people that are in there like, what's about to happen?
Yeah.
So.
But, yeah, you're right. So, yeah, that happened throughout the day. And, like, I don't consider myself a part, like, an active member of, like, Toronto Black Twitter. I feel like I'm, like, an affiliate, or, like, you know what I mean? Or I feel like I'm like a second cousin. Like, I don't think I'm in the mix, you know what I mean? Because a lot, like I mentioned yesterday, a lot of those, like, OG members are older than
I am.
Yeah,
it's way,
you know what
old.
I mean? And they've been knowing each other for, like, 10 years
and
plus.
And beefing for that long too.
Yeah, and beefing for 10 years plus. So I don't want to be like, yeah, you know, I don't feel like that's my place. Like, I wasn't there throughout the whole Rough Riders situation. So like I said, I'm like a second cousin, but I still see it, you know. I still know a lot of people involved in it, so I decided to be a part of it. So the day went on, and, you know, I kind of saw people saying certain things on Twitter, and I was like, oh, this is supposed to be positive, I think, but people are asking like valid questions for sure. I was seeing valid questions, but it was kind of like, now I'm kind of confused at what this is. And now I'm getting anxious on joining the Zoom because I'm scared someone's going to ask for someone's address. And then all of a sudden, everyone's going to leave the meeting at once.
Pull up.
So, yeah, I was super kind of anxious before. And then I was kind of counting down. I was talking to my friends, all right, yo, like 7:30, like half an hour, like, we're going to join, blah, blah, blah. So I just remember, like, 8 o'clock hitting. And I was like, okay, let me just log in and see. I remember when I logged in, I was like, I logged in with 34 people already in there, and this was like maybe like 8:02, and I was like, damn, like 30 people. Okay, I thought that. And I saw the numbers go up, and it was like, you know, like 50, 60.
You thought it was gonna be like an Instagram live where it's just you and them?
Yeah,
and
like, hey. Like, I didn't really expect that many people to show up, and it was like, you know, like 70, 80, and then I saw 100, and I, like, it just stopped at 100. So I was like, I wonder if 100 is the cap or if 100 is just the number that we're stopping at. And then it turned out 100 was the cap. People were literally just waiting outside, like, just in the waiting
like
room.
Me, outside.
Yeah, just waiting to get in. So that was huge that everyone decided to come out. And one thing that I will say was, I think it was one of the, first of all, the meeting was 4 hours. It went from 8:30, and I think we logged out at like 12:30, close to one. So one thing that I will say was, I think it was one of the most powerful things I've ever been a part of. There were so many people there who I've known for years. Like, there was one girl, I don't want to name too many names, but there's one girl there who I knew, you know, quite a bit. And, like, I used to use a fake ID to get into her birthday party.
Oh,
you know
shit.
What I mean? So I was like, yo, this
circle.
Literally, I'm like, there's people in here who, like, I've known for a long time. So it was really good to hear them speak and grow. And, like I said, I was a complete outsider looking in. Like, I didn't really know them back in 2011, 2012, when that kind of bashing dark skin trend was in. It was scary for me to see. And I was really just in there as someone who wanted to press the agenda of, yo, why the fuck did you say that? And I got my answers. You know what I mean? There were a lot of people in there who I commend them for taking the time to say, you know what, like, I was going through this and I thought myself as that, and at home I was treated this way, but outside I was treated like this. So I decided to do it, and I respect their answers 100%. And I think that's a big thing. that came out of that meeting. I think people had a lot of self-reflection and hearing people's stories. I think it was huge. There was no negativity, which I think is a huge thing as well. One thing about Toronto Black Twitter is so many people have strong personalities that it's very easy to clash. I've clashed with a few people on there, and now I'm friends with them and we're cool now, but I've clashed with, had a few up and downs with a lot of people a part of that Twitter community. But just seeing how vulnerable and emotional people were, crying, like it was intense. Wow. Yeah, so, but it was so good. I think it was refreshing. And like I said, this is a time, and one thing Sherry kept saying was, this is a time where we need to come, we have a bigger fight. You know exactly what I mean? We do not need to be fighting each other, because we got to fight the racists.
Literally,
we
white supremacists. Literally. Like, damn, we've been fighting them for 400 years. Yeah. Like, we can't afford to lose soldiers. We can't afford to fight.
Yeah, exactly. We cannot afford to have our own casualties. Light-skinned soldiers
also count. Get in here, please.
Literally. Like, we need all the bodies we can get. We need to go full force. We have a bigger fight to fight, and it's going to be a long fight. And I've honestly never thought something will be so powerful. Like, we saw Trayvon Martin, you know what I mean? We saw so many other young Black men die at the hands of police brutality. But I think this one hit so different was because the whole thing was filmed from beginning to end with George Floyd, which was so unfortunate. Even the story of Breonna Taylor was disgusting, to say the least. Black people, they're not even safe in, we are not safe in our own homes.
No, it's crazy, because I've been saying that this stuff has gone way more attention this time because we're all at home.
Like, mm-hmm. Yes.
And what it made me realize is we've all been dealing with a sort of PTSD from other deaths, but then next day you have to wake up and go to work. Mm-hmm. You have to wake up and, you know, go to school or whatever you're doing with your life. And it's so easy to just forget, and you almost feel invalidated in carrying this grief. I realized up until George Floyd, like, I had carried griefs past certain people's deaths, you know, Trayvon Martin, Tamir Rice. Watching that, I cried the entire day I saw that. And so, but the thing is, you wake up the next day, you don't feel like it's something you can, like, call in and be like, I'm depressed. I just saw a 12-year-old die, you know, on camera. But then now it's like, actually, I'm at home. I have nothing better to do than, like, absorb myself into this, and I can't escape it. And then it gives you time to reflect. And then next thing you know, the whole world is feeling the same thing at the same time. And we're bouncing off each other, which I really like seeing that on Twitter, Instagram, too. Mm-hmm. Like, it felt like for the first time, especially for non-Black people, it wasn't like we're yelling at a brick wall. Like, people were like, oh, okay, like, this is actually crazy, which in of itself is annoying, because it's like, it took you this long to realize. Exactly. But it's, are we gonna pick up the fight of being like, why are you ignoring us all these years? You know, let's just move on. Now you're paying attention. Now what are we gonna say now that we have the platform? And now how are we gonna act moving forward, knowing that the spotlight is on us, on Black issues right now? So I think that's the bigger issue right now. Figuring out what we're going to do next.
It's so big. And I think one of the questions, because I know in the family meeting we're talking about, we need to support each other, we need to buy Black. I feel like there's so many people, especially Black people in just Toronto that I know personally, who are so creative, who are so business oriented, who are so intelligent, and they have so many bigger things ahead of them. We need to uplift each other. And one of the questions that I had is, have we been letting ourselves down for the last, I don't know how many years, of not supporting our own community? You know what 100%. I mean? 100%. I saw a tweet today that said, oh my God, what's it? It's like, we're so easy to, like, buy from McDonald's, or like, and we're so easy, and that's not even good quality food. You know what I mean? It's also owned by the white man. But, you know, we give a hard time to the Black person who's starting their own business, who might not answer the phone. You know what I mean? Or things like that. We're so quick to judge, or to, like, get snappy with certain businesses, but it's like, we go to McDonald's and order a nasty Big Mac.
The ice cream machine is always fucking broken. And we still go back. Is that insanity? Literally the definition of insanity, when you keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different
Exactly. Foods. But if the mom and pop jerk shop doesn't have oxtail gravy, we lose our fucking shit.
It's okay.
And we don't go back. And we don't go back. But if McDonald's ice cream machine is broken, we're like, fuck it, I'll come back tomorrow. All right. You all said before 9. Okay, I'll come back tomorrow at 8. Yeah, you know what I mean? Literally. So we have to be more open to, you know, everyone has ups and downs in their business. But like I said, as a Black community, we need this more than ever to come together. We need to, if you want to start a business, you know, start it. If you have a passion, do it. Like, I'm here talking in a mic and I've never done this before. So.
Right. I think it's interesting you bring that up, because I saw another tweet that said, you can't buy your way Black out of systemic racism. Mm-hmm. And I think that has like two facets to it. One, obviously there's a lot of obstacles stacked against us, which explains your point. Like, you can't necessarily expect, like, perfect everything, considering everything that this young entrepreneur has had to go through to get there, right? So we need to have a level of leniency to a degree, but also you need to understand, like, what's happening with these Black business owners is, you know, you make your money and then you move into a white neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
or you buy Gucci,
mm-hmm.
or you spend your dollar earned from Black people into white hands. So you're not exchanging the money back into the community. And also what happens when you move into these neighborhoods, guess what? You're still up to them. And then you have
you're
these stories.
Remember, we looked at each other, you're still up.
Literally. Mm-hmm. And then that's what happens. Like, you have the case of, what's it called? Michael Jordan or something. Or no, LeBron James had, like, the N-word spray painted across his...
What?
Yeah, I swear that happened last year. We're going to have to fact check that. But yeah, I swear that happened. Or you have, like, the Karen in the park, right?
Oh, yeah.
That Cooper guy, everyone was like, he's an avid birder, went to Harvard, like, all these accolades as if he deserves more respect that way. But, like, mm-hmm. even then, that's to prove a point. You're going to move into these neighborhoods, and guess what? You're trying to leave where you came from and spend your money here. And at the end of the day, no matter what, when push comes to shove, you're still a Black man, and they're going to treat you as such and remind you of that if you step out of bounds,
mm-hmm.
or if you happen to just have not even do anything, you know? And so it's, we also have to be accountable in, as business owners, consumers, it's reciprocal. So if I'm spending money in the Black community, you have to also use your earnings to enrich that community.
Yeah.
Stay in those neighborhoods. Because guess what? When you leave, Regent Park right now, gentrified. There's hella white people there right now. And all the Black people that made money there moved to, like, Saga, whatever, yeah. bought their homes. But if you would have stayed, your home would be worth, like, $2 million right now. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if we don't take the chance to hop into our own communities and enrich our own communities, somebody else is going to come in and push us out. So
they've been doing.
They've been doing that. So it goes both ways, definitely. Like, stop taking money earned from Black people to go prove something to white people by mimicking them or spending into their way of life. And especially the whole designer thing, that, like, literally pisses me off mm-hmm. so much. Like, who are you trying to prove a point to?
Mm-hmm.
It's, I don't know.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're yeah, no,
you're snapping.
Bars.
You literally hit them with the bars. You're right. At the end of the day, I say we make our money, we move into these big houses in white neighborhoods, and you're still up. Exactly. And yep. I think, yeah, like I said, if you follow me, I've been dragging Black men specifically all day, because all these things are coming up that they've said. And I know the specific man that I dragged
those tweets. We're not even going to give him a platform.
Yeah, we're not. No. But I know those tweets were, 6 years ago, but you still think like that. You know what I mean? Oh, like, I've
seen him.
Yeah, exactly. We've seen you, and people have said from, you know, like, even a couple months ago, he said, you know what I mean? So it's like, whatever, do what you have to do. But it's just like, yeah, and I told him straight up, yo, you can flaunt with your white people in the club and, you know, only let white girls in your booth and call Black girls whatever, but at the end of the day, you are still a, when they look at you. So don't ever try it. Don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they will use that word when they want to. And what are you going to do?
Run clown. Back.
Exactly.
Run back.
Exactly. We're you're there dancing you for them. For
we're
what?
Not, we're literally not taking it back. You know who you are. Stay but over there.
Literally. And I think it's just so disappointing, because one thing I said, like, yo, Black women fight so hard for Black men.
So hard.
And it's like, what's not clicking? Like, why can't you guys, like, not you, I shouldn't say it, but why can't some Black men even reciprocate this, like, the same type of respect? I don't get it.
I genuinely don't.
Because the thing is, it's like, we fight hard, man. We defend them with everything, and we work to support our families and our Black sons, and it's just like, it gets thrown in our faces almost all the time.
Yep.
Like, almost 9 times out of 10, it's so sad.
Yep.
But that's a problem, and like I said, it starts from home, and racism starts from home. And that's another thing too, where I was speaking to a family. I actually want to read what she said, because she posted a really deep Instagram caption the other day, and that's why I was like, your racism is genuinely taught. Like, basically, this family friend, she has a 4-year-old son. I've known her literally since I was probably born. Her name is Alicia, and her family and our family are super close. You know what I mean? Every birthday, things like that, we've been close. And, you know, she's super vocal right now on what has happened. So let me find. So she wrote a caption. I'm going to read it. I asked her for permission before. So This was posted on June 2nd, and the caption reads, "I have grappled with posting this, but a conversation with my girl triggered me to finally do it. She posted, 'When do my sons stop being cute to you and become the enemy?' Such a gut-wrenching question. In light of this quote, I have decided that it's time to use my little platform to help educate. As you know, my feed is predominantly images and videos of my adorable and brilliant son. He brings joy to those who encounter him. I even receive requests from friends and family to post more frequently so they can continue to see him grow and flourish. He has a good life. He is loved and well cared for. But even before he turned 2 years old, he had already been discriminated against. The day this photo was taken, we were enjoying his first experience on a trampoline. At one point, an angry little boy approached us and pointed at my sweet little baby and said, 'He needs to get out of here.' I asked him why. He replied, 'He has black I know. I asked him why. He replied, 'He has black skin. He needs to go to the black side.' I am opening up and sharing this moment because people need to realize that this happens in Canada. This isn't an American issue. Racism exists in Brampton, Mississauga, Georgetown, Orangeville, Toronto, etc. This is a us problem, not a US problem. Racism isn't just black and white issue either. The child who so blatantly disrespected my boy was not black or white. Please, if you want to help and make change, recognize and acknowledge that these issues occur right here, right now, to people who claim to respect and love you. Comments have been turned off because this is not a discussion. This is a lesson."
Wow.
She dropped the mic on that one.
That was heavy. And yeah, honestly, I think about that all the time. I feel like young black men, young black boys become men in people's eyes sooner than other boys. I think young black girls are sexualized sooner, mm-hmm. and I have my own experiences with that, mm-hmm. Sooner than white children or other race children. And the issue here is just like, everyone needs to understand that everybody has racial bias,
right?
And even black people. But the mm-hmm. difference is when you're at the bottom, race, right? Racism, it's inherently hierarchical, right? And we're at the bottom of the hierarchy. So whatever opinions we have doesn't really have that much of an impact. Like, right. I can call white people whatever I want to call at home, which I don't, but they can still go out and get a loan, get a job, yep. get a rental, whatever they want in their life, right? So there's power dynamics at play that affect us more than other races.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as people start understanding that, like, it's better to acknowledge the fact that you have these racial biases than ignore them and pretend they don't exist, because that doesn't help anybody. And it happens within black communities, you know, with the whole colorism thing, and it happens more so between us and other communities. And the problem is here that it's life and death. Like, mm-hmm. if it was just certain civil liberties, whatever, but like, this is, it's getting to a point where it's not getting to a point, but it's been life and death. And ignoring the link between police brutality, institutionalized racism, and then racial bias at home, it's just like trying to ignore everything. That kid's gonna grow up to have to occupy a position,
mm-hmm.
God knows what position, you know. It could be corporate, it could be policing, anything. And those biases, if they go unchecked, are going to be carried with him throughout his entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to have an impact on other black people, whether it be one person or multiple, depending on what this kid grows up to do. So it's about taking accountability, realizing it starts in your own home.
100% starts in your home. That's like, I messaged her, I'm like, bro, I'm like, that, no 4-year-old knows to say that.
Right.
You know what I mean? And she, I think, handled the situation when we talked about it much better than I would.
What did she do?
I don't want to say too much, but she did less. Well, she approached the mom basically in an angry way, but I would have done more to the
deaf
mom.
Us.
She would have got a deaf us. I would have done, and I'm not a violent person anymore. I've had my few shares.
You can't see my face right now, but I'm like, okay.
I've had my few shares of rumbles, but as I got to an actual adult, I don't believe in fighting or violence unless it's like absolutely necessary. But if a little boy came to my son and that trampoline
over with.
That trampoline park would have to close down that day. Sorry, we are out of business today.
That's another thing. How come none of these racists ever run into any of us? Like,
man, that is one. I was like, there's some stories I hear. I'm like, bro, why hasn't this happened to me?
I would teach someone a lesson. I'm not even violent at all, but I will cuss you the hell out.
Like, some people are like, oh, you know what? Someone said, I'm like, someone's, even sometimes at like my old jobs, people are like, yeah, customer said this. I mean, customer said, like, what? Like, why am I never put in these positions? I think because God's protecting me. because he knows my reaction would be detrimental. So okay. that's what I'm going to think of it as. That's why I like to peace of mind, because I feel like if I ever get in that position, no, it'd be curtains for me and them.
I realize now I lied, but I'll ask you afterwards. But I've had that happen over racism. And honestly, it was so crazy that I didn't know what to do. So,
oh, when you were called.
Yeah, I was called. Let me just say it to the people. I was called a nigger, bro. Me and my entire family were in Mississippi. We drove from my sister lives. I know, right? Like, yeah, literally
the worst.
It was expected, but like I went to visit my sister who lives in New Orleans, right? And then we decided we want to go up to the water. Closest beach was in Mississippi. We drive up. We're pulling up to the parking lot. I guess we cut this man off, perhaps going to the parking lot. Who knows? We're pulling out. We got like the chairs, the cooler, like the most picture perfect family, like me, my sister and her kids and husband and my brother. And my brother was like in his hothead phase, right? So you would have thought it would have went crazy. But it was so hilarious, sis, because it was the first time we walk out and he's like, you got the whatever, you fucking niggers. And we're like,
it's the shock. Because I feel like it's the shock. Honestly, now I think about it, I've been called a nigger. And the thing is, he was in his car. And
They're always in their car.
I was walking. So I was like, I can't chase a man when I'm on my way to class.
Damn, it was by U of T?
This was by U of T. And I was crossing the street, and it was like, you know when it counts down?
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure it was like 22 seconds. Like, I had time, you know what I mean? And he's going to make the left, and he makes the left in front of me, and I give him the finger, and he's like, you nigger, can't even cross. And I was like, whoa.
Right.
I am crossing the damn street.
He could have called you a bitch. Like, yeah. He's so many words.
And I was like, hey. And I was like, I'm on foot. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if I was in a car 100% chase down, and my family, my family has done chase downs before. I've been in the car with my older cousin, and I remember I was maybe like 9, and I think someone called him out of his name, and he was like, yo, we're like, buckle up.
Right.
We're doing a chase down. Literally, like, we're going to McDonald's, and I think some guy cut him off or said something or called him out of his name, and he was like, yo, buckle your seatbelt. Like, it's a chase down. And he went and he cussed the guy off. And that's how, you know what I mean? We have to defend ourselves in situations like that. But it's like, yeah, I think if you're not in a position to really defend yourself, or it catches you so off guard, you're like, yo, did I just get called an N-word? Like, me? Like, excuse me? Like, yeah, so. And they're always doing when they're on foot or they're moving. You know what I mean? Like, they'll never just stand in front of you and just say it with their chest. At least not to me.
Right.
They're always, like, in a car, like, in passing or, like, running or, like, you know what I mean?
It's never. Breaking news, racists are cowards.
Yeah, literally. It's always, like, you're doing stuff that, like, stand here. And fight me for it. Like, don't be in your car and I'm on foot, or don't be in the car and I'm in the car. You know what I mean? So, yeah, man, they're chicken. Chickens out.
No, but I think that brings up a good point, which is, like, in Canada, we don't usually really deal with overt racism, which I guess is the reason why a lot of people believe we don't have racism in this country. False. Completely false. So I guess the next thing that we deal with all the time is covert racism.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, speak on it. I have my own issues with that, but I don't know, like, if you want to kick it off.
It's the ignorance that bothers me. It's like the questions about the hair always gets me. And it's like, can I touch it? No, the fuck you can't. You literally can't. I don't want to touch your hair because it's greasy. So why the fuck do you want to touch mine? And it's just like, and it's the stupid, like, questions that people make, are the assumptions that all Black people are from either Africa or Jamaica.
You know? Right.
And that one kills me. And I think there was a situation once where a Black person, they were like, they're someone who was white insinuated that a Black person's family was from Jamaica. And this was in a work environment. And he was just like, what? like literally, no. Like, I'm pretty sure he's from another island in the Caribbean. It's slipping my mind right now.
The white person's like, they're not all Jamaica?
Literally. Like, literally. Like, so Jamaica is not a continent? You did not come from there? And it's just like, just because that's like the only really
Bob
country.
Marley.
Yeah. The only country you know. It's just like, no. Black people are literally everywhere.
Yep.
And it's a problem. And it's like, we were taken from Africa and brought to places we didn't even want to fucking go.
Yep.
And now we're here still getting oppressed in places we did not want to be.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare. And I remember I had a friend the other day who had like a whole concept. He was like, honestly, like, every Black person should just pick up and, like, go back to Africa and just build what we were supposed to do, what we started, and just start a whole, like, community that will thrive and stuff. But I feel like we shouldn't even have to move. Like, let's do that here in our homes. You know, I was born in Canada. You were born in Africa, so you can speak on it more. But Like, I feel like I've never, we have like Chinatown, Koreatown, Little Italy.
Yeah.
Do we have a Little Greece or something like that? Greek town.
Greek town. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We have all these like small communities where people in that community support each other. You know what I mean? And we need that as a black community. And we don't have that, not to the extent where other minority groups do. So now is definitely the time. Like, I need shop black everything.
Yeah. I think it's complicated, right? It's multi-layered because the thing is, black as an identifier is only specific to us, right? Mm-hmm. Other communities have Greek. They're not like European town, like European world.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of people have problems with the term black, because it comes from being othered. Like, before Europeans came to Africa, we never thought of ourselves as black people. We are the majority, right? And the whole problem is our history, as far as we know it, like back home, the history that I learn is dates as far back as when the first white person came into my country. Mm-hmm. I don't know African history. Like, I'm not taught anything before that point, because obviously they're the ones that, you know, alphabetize the language and teach the history. And then so you have a whole population in Africa that in the mainstream education, their history begins with colonization or whatever. And then you move here and Black Americans, their history begins with slavery, which obviously that's not their history. Right. So it's like our history has always been other. Like, they came in, took our land, took our people, imposed their history, their language, all their religion, and then now gave us this title, black, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. which is like unanimous to all of us. Like, to a white person, me and you are the same, but we have completely different heritage. Right. I'm from Burundi, you're from Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's difficult, which is why we have these differences between our own black community, because we're from all over the place. Mm-hmm. And then so the covert racism comes into play, because now we're here. It's like, okay, you know, Canadians, black Canadians came to at the same time as settlement and, you know, helped build the country and been around as long as white people. But at the end of the day, we're always othered. It's always like the small comments. Where are you from? You know, the hair thing. It's just like, why am I always constantly reminded of being different? Like, exactly. I speak like you. I'm not even born here, but I speak like you.
Yep.
And I know you're not from here.
And English is what, your third language?
My third language.
Exactly.
So I know when I speak to any white person, I don't care to ask them, where are you from? Because we're all in Canada. It's a country made of settlers, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, on indigenous land. And so I know you're not from here. I don't care, okay? How come you can't move past that? And it's like, that covert racism infiltrates every interaction black people have every single day. And it's like, whether even if it's from a good intention of, oh, where are you from? You look so exotic, or like whatever, whatever. Or is that your real hair? Because I don't know.
Black,
like,
people don't have hair.
Right, exactly.
Or their hair don't go past their ears.
Right. All that bullshit, which is so annoying, because
bullshit.
As a young girl, you literally grow up feeling like you have to prove that you have hair, which makes no sense.
It's actually terrible. Like, I could definitely agree and attest to that. It's bad, man.
It's
like,
awful.
I used to hate my hair texture. Like, you ask anyone, I used to want to perm my hair because I wanted that white girl texture. I used to hate like, there would be days where I'm like, oh my God, I have to wash my hair. And I have to dedicate a whole entire day to wash my hair because I didn't even know how to comb it properly. And my mom would try to help me and I would get so frustrated and she would try to teach me and I wouldn't want to learn. And it got to the point where when I became an adult, maybe like, no, actually not an adult, maybe like late high school, when I moved out. So maybe like, yeah, late high school to first university, I was like, okay, I need to actually learn how to properly do my hair so it can grow and it can be healthy, because my hair, obviously my hair is different. I have like, what, like a 4A, 4B texture. So my hair is kinky. It's not like curly, it's kinky.
Yeah.
So it's all like, you have to understand your hair and like, yeah, you have to understand it and know what works, and not everyone's the same. And it's difficult to try to explain to people why you have to do things with your hair. Like, I don't ask Karen why her hair is blonde.
Right.
Oh, you know, I don't care that you dyed your hair, but you care when I come and get braids.
And more times, they're not natural blondes either.
Exactly.
Like, keep it pushing, Karen.
Yeah. Like, and like, when you come in and you dye your hair or you get your front bangs, I never ask you, oh, why'd you do that? But it's, if I come in with a 26-inch weave, it's, oh, why? That's interesting. Did your hair grow?
Right.
It's like, no, it did not grow from 10 inches to 26 yesterday. Thank you.
Yeah.
For being literally stupid. Like,
for me, it's just a constant reminder of them basically saying you're different.
Yeah,
like,
that's literally
every
what it
day
is.
They're saying you're different, you're different, you're different. And it's like, okay, damn, I know, like, can we move on?
No, actually. And I think that's why, yeah, it's kind of like, how do we do this fight to prepare for the next generation? And I don't even think I have that answer, even though that's something I wanted to ask today. It's like, how do we fight this fight to the intensity that needs to be fought at. So the next generation.
Let me put on my Dr. Umar hat, because I do have a bit of an answer to that.
If you are a coon, super coon, or Negro in training, jump off. Jump off this podcast right now.
Let me put on my Dr. Umar. He's crazy, but he has a little truth in his craziness. He has a little truth.
Sometimes I'm like, okay, you're saying a little bit of facts disguised behind the psycho there.
So I think that, so there's this author. Let me search him while we're talking. I'm sorry. But basically, he wrote a great book, Powernomics. His name is Dr. Claude. Let me just make sure I got it right. Dr. Claude Anderson, right? Mm-hmm. And his whole idea, like, I'm paraphrasing, get familiar with him yourself. I would encourage you to. His whole idea is we were bamboozled, misled by focus. Let us stray. Hoodwinked.
We have been hoodwinked.
We were fucking hoodwinked. By being convinced to focus on civil liberties. Like, do you understand how crazy of a battle that is to get someone to think of you as a whole human? Like, if somebody doesn't think I'm a whole human, it's too late. The battle is lost. The white supremacist is never going to view me as somebody that matters.
Yeah.
Forget it. So his whole thing is Martin Luther King, though he led a great fight, instead of worrying about integration, what he should have been worried about, or what black people need to be worried about, is economic power.
Amen.
Group economics specifically. And we see this in all, especially in Canada. I'll take Canada as an example. Indian communities are the quickest communities to go from poor to middle class, upper middle class.
Indian.
Okay. Or, yeah, Indian, Sri Lankan. I'll just group them together. I'm not sure. Okay. And you can kind of see it. I mean, you live in Brampton, you know, mm-hmm. Indian, how they are. They move into the house, they all live together, they buy within their circle, mm-hmm. the money's exchanged multiple times within their community. And then
Indian people work hard, man.
Hard.
They were, like I said, where I live in Brampton, and I live in an area where there's fairly a lot of Indian people, a lot of Indian immigrants, and they work their full-time job, they have like two part-time jobs, you know what I mean? And they, like I said, the money's exchanged within their community, within their family. Yeah.
And the thing is, like, we live in a capitalist system, so the idea of capitalism doesn't give a fuck about humans. Like, mm-hmm. it's literally about, like, how can we maximize return, and who cares about what happens in the process, right? Which is why we have all these, like, child laborers or whatever, child slave labor or whatever, right? So if we're in this system, they're never going to care about us as people, but if we have purchasing power, if we have, as an identifier, black people are somebody that they can look to and say, they are an audience, they are a consumer, they are a business, then we have more power, we have more leeway to make other demands than us starting off now trying to ask for civil liberties. Like, mm-hmm. it's not going to work. And his book talks about, basically, it's very simple, group economics. Try to have money switch between black communities as much as you can. I think I'm going to side note so I can get the full details right now, because it's really important. It's something crazy. It says, like, how Jewish communities, like, the money is exchanged within their communities at least 11 times. And with black communities, this is in the States, it's like twice.
Oh.
Twice. Or maybe once. So before it gets moved out. So it's like, I buy your product, you're a black business owner, you go buy Gucci. That's basically what he's saying. It's not going back and forth. And, like, for success, it needs to be done multiple times. And you need to do it 4 or 5 times. Chinese community, you know they're popping. Yeah. Chinatowns across the world,
literally
every single city every has a Chinatown. Every single
city across North America and beyond.
They got one in Africa, in Burundi. They got Chinatown. Really? Hell yeah! We have, like, you know how there's like the T&T supermarket here.
Yeah.
The first supermarket in Burundi is a Chinese-owned supermarket. So let that shit sink in.
Yeah. So what you're saying is basically I need to gift all my little cousins the, what is it, Powernomics
by Dr. Claude Anderson. And then he has I was introduced to him through a Breakfast Club interview. And that interview is about an hour long. Best hour, like, I could have watched. And the thing is, he was around during the civil rights movement. So mm-hmm. he was there. But, you know, he's always stuck onto the idea of economics first. And here, there's a quote here. I'm going to go ahead and read it, okay? Let's see. So, he says, power is the ability to get things done despite the resistance and opposition of others. Economics is the production, distribution, and consumption of goods and wealth. Powernomics then is the ability of blacks to pool resources and power to produce, distribute, and consume in a way that creates goods and wealth that black people control. That's basically what Powernomics is in a nutshell. You're combining power and economics. And it's easy to kind of dismiss the importance of it because you're thinking like, but we just need to not be killed. But you don't understand, like, the police are literally there. The origins of police actually started out in Europe, and what they were as an institution was made to protect land, right? Mm-hmm. And so people who owned the most land had the police, and an extension of land was slaves. So, and then that got carried over to the US and you know, throughout the world, everywhere has policing. But once you understand that, they're basically there to protect private property. So people who own private property own police officers. That's why you see, right, Karen's calling them like it's their goddamn assistant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hi, I'm inconvenienced in the slightest. Can, mm-hmm, you come help me and arrest this person? Because honestly, that's what the police are there for. That's what their purpose is. And that's why they show up and don't do anything. Like, right, they come and they maybe tell her she's exaggerating, or worse, they arrest the black person.
Yeah, exactly.
Or kill the black person. Yeah. And then it's like, we can't expect this institution that was based on private property to all of a sudden respect us. Mm-hmm. That's why all this bullshit about like police reform,
nah,
like sensitivity training, I'm like, y'all not gonna reform anything.
Nope.
If we understand what their purpose is, then we need to make it so that they are our employers, exactly, our employees. Sorry.
Technically, they are our employees. Like,
I mean, it's, yeah, our, we dollars, pay taxes.
We, exactly. Our taxes go to pay the salaries of the police officers.
But we need to own land.
Yeah, you're right.
We need to own it.
Why'd you look at me in my eyes like that when you said it?
I'm dead ass.
No, but that's big. Yeah, no, that's something I think, I feel like I need to gift, like I said, I need to gift that book to all my little cousins on their 18th birthday, because, yeah, no, we need to prepare them for better.
Right.
Way better.
Because as it is right now, right, we're just taught, like, follow along the rules, mm-hmm, be polite, get your job, whatever, whatever, and, like, you know, you will have security. But we're realizing, first of all, we don't have security, which, exactly, is, like, the basis of,
which is our human right.
Right, basic. Like, that's all we want.
Yeah.
So then we have to look back and be like, actually, we should be striving for more than just basic safety.
Mm-hmm.
We should be striving for a little bit more than that.
Than just wanting to live.
At this point, yeah, right? Like, maybe 400 years ago, but at this point, like, maybe I want to own something.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe I want to, like, walk around and feel like I belong. I don't think I'm going to see that in my lifetime, but that one, like, maybe, who knows? Right. Because even if you are black and work, that comes with different.
What do you mean?
Like, even when you follow the rules,
right,
and you get your corporate job or teaching job or whatever, you still have to deal with the fact that you are black first.
Yeah, no, 100%. And you'll always be seen as such.
Right. So.
It's just, I don't know, it's hard. And I think I've had so many, like, white people or non-black people in my life, or previously in my life, reach out to me and was just like, you know, like, I'm sorry, and, like, I'm here for you. And first of all, don't tell me you're sorry. It's another thing too. I know. I am in.
But do you think they're saying sorry? Like, I'm sorry for not realizing that I may have been playing into racism, or they might
haven't
be apologizing.
Said in those words. So I'm not gonna take it as that. That's, I feel like, true. You're just saying you're sorry just because you feel bad about what you're seeing on the news.
Yeah.
Not necessarily you're sorry for potentially being ignorant to certain things that may have involved you and I, or things like, I personally don't think it's coming from that place, because that's not the way you worded it. Yeah. So I'm gonna assume otherwise.
Yep.
But another thing that I want to mention is, when it comes to talking to you probably have more white friends than I do. To be very honest, like, I don't really have a lot of, yeah, I don't know, I don't have, yeah, a lot of white friends, like, people, like, actual friends that, like, I see on a daily basis or speak to. So it's kind of like, I was talking to, you know, other friends and families who have white friends or an interest, like, talking to their white friends is hard, you know what I, yeah, mean? And it's like, people say it's not our job to educate you on something that's been so prevalent for so long. It's not our job to educate you on that.
No.
So my question is, how, yeah, like, how do you talk to your white friends or your non-black friends, and, like, where do you draw the line if they're not getting it? Because I've heard situations where it's like, yo, they really say some ignorant shit, Yeah. And my personal thing is like, yo, cut them off. Like, that's it.
Yeah, dead for it. Sure. I think I've been lucky. So my like closest friend who is white, I've known her since I was 8 years old. Mm-hmm. She's very woke, you know?
Right.
And so she's the type that might call out something before I notice it.
Mm-hmm.
We also live together. She also has weirdly always had an affinity to black people. Not even black men, but like I remember when we were like in grade 4, she'd be like, damn, I wish I had your hair. Like seriously, like upset, like that she doesn't have 4C hair. And I'm like, okay. Also, fun fact, she like gave me single braids when we lived together.
Yeah, I remember you told me that. Like, yeah. Her first try, though, something like that.
I was like, you know, I'm really broke. I'm a first year. We're living together. And I'm like, but I need to get braids done. Like, I'm struggling. And she's like, yo, I can do it. I'm like, can you? How hard could it possibly be? And like 10 Disney movies later, we were done. It took long, but it looked decent.
Yeah, I remember seeing they did look good. So you're like, yeah, my roommate did them. I was like, really?
Yeah, and it was a bonding experience for sure. And I realized that most people don't have that relationship with white people. But another thing is we always have these conversations. I'm always mm-hmm. reminded of the fact that I'm black. So I'll tell her, I'll be like, oh God, I was at work and somebody said this and this and this. But I think what people are realizing because of what happened recently is they've never had these conversations with their white / non-black friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just for the first time hearing them say some stuff that they've learned at home, you know, mm-hmm. and that may have not come up, but they grew up hearing things like just comply. Don't, you know, like mm-hmm. what was he doing in the first place, you know, assuming that he was guilty. And so people are just realizing that their friend isn't really who they thought they were. And part of it is like, obviously your friend is a piece of shit if they aren't willing to hear your side, whatever, whatever. But part of it is like, you have to hold yourself accountable. Like, why aren't you having these conversations with the white people in your life and like partners as well, dating? And I've had experience with that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you definitely need to have that race combo early because it'll sneak up on you and you'll be like, I didn't know you thought like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And then now you're like, damn, I've been with this man for a year. And he thinks reverse racism is real? Damn.
So then what? What does it think? What do you do? Because I've never, like I said, I've never dated outside of my race. Like, I'm very open with that. I've never had an experience with any other man except for a black man, so.
Honestly, okay, so my first relationship was very childish, so we didn't really have those conversations. But, you know, like, I remember when like Mike Brown died, like we'd have those conversations and I understand that he understands what I'm going through to a degree. But even most recently, actually, I've had this conversation where somebody that I thought was woke was saying some crazy shit. And mind you, we've been talking for like a couple, like a year or more. So.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Like
yes.
not dating, but like like talking, right? So I think I know him and, you know, I think he's woke, right? And then it turns out he was joking, apparently.
Oh,
but,
please.
It's like the convo comes up.
He was joking and being racially insensitive.
Right.
So but just kidding.
Exactly.
Fuck out of here.
And so the convo comes up. It was so off guard. It was just something like, like the trend on Twitter nowadays is just to make fun of white people. And I was like, yeah, I mean, y'all are funny. You make it easy. But I was like, yeah, it can happen. And he's like, I don't know, man. That's some reverse racism. And I was like, what?
Literally what?
Nick, what? Yeah. That's also something bad about dating non-black people. It's like all the time whenever I'm like, I want to be like, Nick, what? But I can't.
You can't say it. Nope.
But then it led to a conversation. We've worked it out now where I'm like, you can't make those type of jokes and not address the actual issues because mm-hmm. it makes me feel invalidated and also makes me question whether you realize this reality for me, right? Like,
right.
I'm not going to assume that you know this. And when you leave space for interpretation by not having a real conversation about it, I'm going to assume that you're like, you know, not as woke as I thought you were. But this isn't even someone I'm dating, but I knew these convos had to happen and it made me take a step back, reevaluate what was going on, and like, I'm definitely going to move differently going forward,
mm-hmm.
especially with that situation. So, but like, people are getting into entire relationships choosing to ignore that. You know, there's people, black people, who are saying like, oh, like, he doesn't care about me being black. It's like, I sure hope he doesn't care about you being black. But like,
he doesn't see color.
Right. But does he care about what's going on? Like, that's the bare minimum, is him caring if you're black or not. Yeah. Like, what the fuck?
Literally.
So I think people just need to have these conversations. If it's uncomfortable, like, so what? It's uncomfortable being black in North America every day. So. Yeah.
Literally every day. And I think the only times that I've really had to kind of get uncomfortable or force people to be uncomfortable was with work. And I was super open, and I've been one of the biggest advocates for bringing this up in your workplace. And I have so many family, friends, even strangers have followed me and DM'd me like, hey, like, how do I bring this up in my meeting? Like, what do I say in this email? It's because, like I said, we spend what? Most of our time at work. Most people spend 8 hours a day at work. As a black person, we get our money from these companies wherever we work for to do our roles, and they have to be addressed at work.
Yeah.
There is no reason why this should not be addressed by your employer at all. You work for them, you see them every day, the company pays you. Why are you not addressing what I'm going through if I'm an associate of yours? And I think one thing that I did, which kind of started the conversation, was that first Instagram post I made, which was like the notes of me talking. Like, I work in social marketing, and one of the things, the notes that I made and posted on Instagram was just like me calling out, commending other brands for posting on the weekend that weekend, and kind of hurt that didn't happen at my workplace at the time. They definitely made up a lot of ground, and I definitely commend my workplace for doing that, because we've had a lot of uncomfortable discussions, and they really gave Black people the platform to speak and share how they feel, whether it's personal, whether it's professional, whether it's old stories or new stories, and they were really receptive. But yeah, we really had to push that conversation. Like you said, that's the difference of being proactive and reactive. You know, how are you using your voice as a black person? And like I said, it's time to speak up. And I know it's hard for certain people because everyone's different, has different personalities. A lot of people don't want to speak up, or there's, and one time, sorry, going around, but someone mentioned me on Twitter, and they were like, oh, I commend you for doing this, but I can't do it in my workplace. And he said that he was scared that they would hold a promotion from him. And I was like, see, that's not even
that's
a conversation.
That's a reality, though.
It is, 100%. And it was hard for me to even look at it, because that shouldn't even be a thought for us. Imagine a white person thinking, well, if I speak out something I feel was wrong in the workplace, I'm not going to get, like, that's never going to happen to you. You know what I mean? They're not going to hold a promotion from you. But to not speak about something that's so strong and something that's so in our faces every day, it's like, it's a disservice.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And like I said, straight up, I'm like, people will lose business because of this. And it has to be addressed like every day. These conversations have to, and it has to start internally before it's externally. Like, you know what I mean? A lot of these companies have their executive teams, and they're all usually white men. Definitely. So how are you putting up a black square for something you don't understand?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. So that's where I think where I'm pushing in my workplace is we need to get people of color in these higher roles.
Yeah. And we I commend you for that. That was really good.
Yeah.
I think we had really different experiences because you were proactive. Your company, as well as your response, was very proactive. Like, you felt they hadn't addressed it. You said something, it got back to them. And then they decided to have a conversation internally. And, you know, it sounds like it went well.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with the company I work for, it was you do the PR move and people go, that's funny, you're low-key racist, right?
LOL, what are you
guys doing? And that's what happened, right? And then so now they're scrambling to then save face.
Mm-hmm.
And so now no matter what they do, and I've, you know, and I had a conversation afterwards, you know, they reached out to all the black partners. But even for me, as much as, you know, it wasn't a racist environment in that sense. You know, I wouldn't still be working there. But as much as I'm rooting for them, I'm just like, damn, like, this looks bad. Like, no matter what you do at this point, it's like you have hundreds of comments of people retelling the same story of feeling like they were, you know, if they were black, there was a glass ceiling to how far they could go up in management positions, or, you know, being told that they didn't look professional because of how they wore their hair. Myself, that's a comment that I received. And so you have all these comments, and then it when you're reacting afterwards to be like, oh, you know, we've heard you, this is a learning curve for us, it looks bad because it's like, there's no way you didn't know this was happening.
Exactly.
And so they failed to realize that they could have addressed this in a humble way by coming forward and saying, you know, we realize that systemic racism is part you know, has infiltrated our policies. And as a result, we have Black partners that don't feel comfortable or that have quit, whatever, whatever, high turnover amongst that population. But, you know, and then now it's just like, okay, like, cool. You've reached out to us. I gave them, like, after you wrote what you said, like, on your Instagram. Mm-hmm. And then you talked about having a phone call with your management and then your president, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, because at first when the manager reached out to us, it was kind of like, this is so fake. Like, you're just trying to save face or whatever.
The manager reached out to you saying that?
No, I felt that way.
Once he
reached out to us.
Right.
In like after the backlash, then it was like, oh, okay, now you want to hear how we feel about it? Like, okay, like you didn't know.
Exactly.
Really?
Yeah.
But then I almost wanted to be like, okay, F it, which is, I realize what most Black professionals deal with every day. Like, there's a certain level of racism that we agree to. And for me, I agreed to the little comments of like, oh, you look very on brand today when I have my hair straight or like in a bun or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that was okay for me because I knew it could be worse at other places. I may not even just get hired because I'm Black. Right. And so when he had that conversation with me, I'm like, as nice as this is, it almost feels like you really didn't know.
Right.
And then it also feels annoying because it's like, why am I having... I saw this tweet that said Black people are having to keep work and then also teach people about racism. That's another full-time job.
Literally.
Like, why am I having to take this on? Why am I having to tell you, a big, you know, Fortune 500 company, that you dropped the ball and that you could have gone about it this way, that you need more people, Black people, not just people of color, because the comments I received were from women of color, but not Black people.
Mm-hmm.
You need more Black people, Black women that can help with your branding, help with your diversity and inclusion team, help with every aspect of the company should have not just diversity of thought, but actual diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just annoying. And I think going forward, they're going to definitely feel the heat from that. I think a lot of people are not going to go back. I think a lot of employees might not go back as employees.
Oh, really?
Oh, for sure. That's even like with...
I wouldn't go back.
That's all these other companies doing all this like PR, like, oh, mm-hmm. we're sorry that we missed the ball with the Black Tuesday thing. Like, but now we're donating $1 million. It's like, F you. Fuck
literally,
you, dog.
Literally. Literally.
Like, yeah. What?
And I would say the company I work for, it was... They were like my direct team was very receptive. I've heard different things from different teams. My team was very receptive, and we really pushed to make sure that we were publicly speaking out on the matter. We did. Yeah, we were definitely more proactive than reactive. We obviously did get some negative feedback, as always. You know, there'd be that one Karen, you know, all lives matter. Blacks are complaining. And we were just like, all right, you know, remove them from the comments or remove them from whatever. But... I was glad that they really stuck to, there's definitely work that has to be done. You know, it was a bumpy road. I'm not going to act like it was like, yeah, you know, I came into work on Monday and all of it. They were just so great. And like, it was posted and it was great. No, it was definitely a lot of up and down and hard work we had to put into before things were done. And a lot of push that needed to happen, especially with our leadership team. But I'm glad it was received as it was at the end of the day. Cause it was a first step. Wasn't the only step, and it was just slightly tilting the needle to the right direction. I'm not going to say it was a complete, we have so much more work to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think these companies are willing to concede some aspects of what their business was before in order to, you know, keep our dollar, but we're not looking for concessional changes. We need transformative changes. So mm-hmm. I'm keeping an eye out. Like, I don't care if you give $1 million to BLM or whatever. Mm-hmm. I want to see how you're transforming your entire operations from the inside. Like, there's no reason why your creative team for a platform that celebrates Black culture is a bunch of white people. Like,
right.
Please.
Literally.
And then also the second part of it is like, I almost feel like I gotta hold myself accountable because like, I kind of know this.
Right.
To a degree. Like, we kind of know this and we still shop there up until now. Yeah. Or like consumed whatever we consumed. Like, I never bought Off-White, thank God.
Oh, Virgil and his...
Right.
Virgil ass.
Gotta keep it two Virgils, bro.
Yeah, literally.
Two Virgies, Virgis. Like, thank you for that word, though.
Yeah, no, that man was so disappointing. I've never bought anything Off-White.
Yeah, but, like, we know this now. So then it's like, we've been knowing it, but okay, now I'm going to give us like the last line, like as of June 2020, like y'all niggas better not be going back there and supporting all these people that have showed their ass literally.
Yeah.
Yeah, do not. If I catch you at any Toronto nightclub, oh, I promise you it's on site.
Yeah. The Toronto. I honestly can't even put it into words.
I
don't even
want to get into this. Yeah, I feel like it feels a little like arbitrary. But like.
Because I. Oh, I. Get them the fuck out of here. Like, out. Literally get the fuck out of here. Yeah. Like, you have the nerve to exploit the fuck out of black. You have, I'll say his name, Scotty Scratch's trash ass on the fucking sticks, butchering dance hall, butchering trap music to a fucking white crowd. And you have white people or black people outside dressed up and can't get in.
Only man that plays Rum and Red Bull for 3 minutes and 47 seconds.
Like, how are you playing the entire Rum and Red Bull song? You uncultured. What? And it stresses me out because I know so many other better DJs.
Shout out Gio.
Gio. DH Phenomenal.
Dahlia.
DJ Rose Gold. Just so many better DJs who don't, like, can't get in there. I wouldn't say can't get, but, like, you know, like, residencies. Like, why don't we see these DJs in these clubs right. every single Saturday? You know, because they don't want to bring the black people in. That is the problem. They want to play the black music and have the black celebrities in. But God forbid Zoe walks in and right. wants to get in the fucking booth.
Right.
Because I'm going to what? What am I going to do in this night? I need to know what I'm going to do.
No, it's actually crazy.
To let people, like.
It's crazy because when I think
no,
about.
No, let's unpack it. We have some time.
Let's speak on it. There's a lot. I think it's two sides of the coin. I also blame myself and other black people.
Oh, I definitely blame myself.
We've known these racist practices. But the thing is. There isn't that many spaces for us. There yeah. are so many hoops to jump through if you are in the entertainment industry and you even want to open a club. If you're black, I know one black club owner of LaPorte or a partial owner.
LaPorte, is that even around anymore?
No. Exactly. Exactly. Hmm. But super nice guy. But even from what I hear, it wasn't easy to get into that. And it's easy to retain also.
Right.
And that's another reason why black and people of color aren't interchangeable, because a lot of these club owners are, you know, Arabic or whatever. Like, they're not necessarily all white guys, but mm-hmm. or even should we talk about Mickey? That I think that nigga is West Indian and he's acting crazy in these streets. Crazy.
I think he's not white, he's definitely West Indian. Or some type of...
I know Mickey's not his real name either. What's your real name, goddammit?
He's just like... Yeah, he's definitely... I just like... I don't understand. Because black people have money too. You know what I mean? Black people spend the money in the club.
The most money in the club. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
And it's like...
Terrible.
I genuinely don't understand. And whoever that girl was, I don't remember her name, that the old promoter at Lost and Found, who was like, well, you know, you have to understand...
Christina?
No.
Was it her?
I think so.
Christina, Asian Christina, Christina, find your real name.
Oh, dropping names, but anyways.
She's a public person. Like, that's her job is in her page, right?
So right.
You're owning up to your thing. My job's not in my page, so good luck with that.
Yeah, my job's not in my page either. That's one thing about me. I keep my job very separate from my personal life. I'm not saying I'm worried about anything, but that's just how I am. But yeah, it's just like to say, like, oh, you know, we don't want to draw in that crowd. We don't want any problems. You know, white people cause problems too. Like, yes. What are you even talking about?
Have you ever seen, like, the World Cup?
Thank you.
A hockey game?
Yes. Have you ever seen, like, walk down King Street at, like, four people? There are white people, like, fighting each other. Like, there's bar fights happen a lot of time between white people. So I'm like, I don't understand what you're scared of when you say you don't want problems, which is why you don't let black people in. I genuinely don't understand.
Right. And the thing is, they can't get away with saying, oh, I didn't know this was happening, because I know people that work in the industry, bottle service girls, photographers, that are like, oh, I'm told not to take pictures of black women. You know, sometimes you can't take pictures of black guys because they look like rappers, right?
Yeah, or exactly.
And then I know bottle service girls that will tell me that they might put, like, they might set up the black spender that's not anyone that's known. They might give him a table that's not necessarily what he should be getting for what they're spending, right? Mm-hmm. Also, you have the problem at the door. And the thing is, these people, like, that's the worst. When you're at the door and the bouncer's acting a fool and you're like, you're black, the fuck?
Yo, there's only one bouncer, on one black bouncer. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
he used to work at ballet. He was the only bouncer who would see us and be like, yeah, we're letting them all in. Them and all their friends. And there'll be white girls in line, and we'll walk up in like slides, hoodies, like definitely not ready for the club. He'd be like, no, we let them in. They're regulars. They're good here. They're good with me. Let them in. And he's the only black bouncer or black bouncer who used to treat us the way they treat white girls used to come regularly. You know what I mean? And it's crazy that him, out of all the bouncers in Toronto, and I hope he knows if he ever hears I'm talking about him, out of all the bouncers in Toronto, he was the only one who treated us just like regular good-looking women coming to the club.
Right. And that's the problem. It's like, if I'm coming to spend, in any other customer service field, if I'm coming to spend money, I get treated as somebody that matters.
Exactly.
For the interaction, at least. Afterwards, you can talk all the shit you want.
Mm-hmm.
But it's crazy because we're in these clubs where it seems like they're catering to us by the music they play and like the themes and whatever. And they're playing onto like black culture, Twitter trends or whatever.
Yep.
And then as soon as I get there, I have my hard-earned dollars. Not me. I don't spend money in the club. But, you know, like... I'm with somebody that has their money.
we'll find somebody in the club who's gonna spend for us. Thank you. That's how it works.
Small little cabin. But anyways, we show up, and that's the only spot I've ever been in, and I'm treated like shit. I'm like, bro, what? How are you gonna disrespect me? And we have bottles.
Yes, literally. Like, we have bottles, and you guys are still being complete assholes. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, and then the bigger problem, too, is... Honestly, I think the bigger problem are these black promoters. I'm going to call you out. You know that they're having these practices.
Mm-hmm.
You yourself might bring all these little white girls from Richmond Hill that are barely of age, got them on the party bus, literally hopping off in front of fucking Lawson. You ever seen that where they hop off the party bus?
What?
That might have been a long time ago. But it's like an actual school bus, and it takes them... They have pickup stops in, like, R Hill or, like, Woodbridge.
What?
Yes. Anyways.
That's a privilege I never experienced. I used to drive my ass.
They'll get off on the corner of, like, Bathurst, and then these promoters will be like, do you guys want to come here? And then they'll go, right?
Mm-hmm.
But my bigger problem is with these black promoters that you know you're in there because you fit the look, cool, whatever.
Yeah.
But you know you're being told to only bring in a certain crowd, and you mm-hmm. do it. And on top of that, you go out of your way to disrespect the black women that still decide to come.
Mm-hmm.
And then beyond that, you still turn around when you decide to become a model, when you decide to launch a clothing company, when you decide to launch your own website. Who do you turn to buy your products?
And they want our fucking dollar after that.
It's definitely not those white girls from Richmond Hill. I promise you that. They're not buying your fucking t-shirt.
They really want us to. And you have the nerve to drop your fucking SoundCloud links. In my DMs after you refused to pour me a drink in the club. Now you want to rap.
Right.
Now you want me to post your fuck out of here.
Right. You'll post your video. You want me to repost your video where you only had the white girls in it.
Right.
They don't listen to your music, first of all. And then, but you want me to repost it. Right. So it's just this vicious cycle of your self-hating or whatever. Or maybe you're just doing it to take the money. But then you still realize, you get reminded, like, I'm a black man. So
yeah, cause
I
need to turn back. At the end of the day, you're still a...
nigga, bro.
that has to be the title of this episode. At the end of the day, you're still up. But
and,
no facts.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's crazy that it's, you know it, like you see it. And the crazy thing is, these promoters outside of this club environment, like the black promoters, I've met black promoters that they tell me like what it is. Like, yeah, I am told to do this, whatever, mm-hmm. whatever. I'm their friend, so I've never, like, if I go out with my homie that's a promoter, like, I never have problems, but that might not be the case for another random black girl. And like, it's not fair that you know, I get to kick it with him because I'm his friend, and but he knows he's working for an institution that's like, okay, you met your quota of black girls, relax.
Yeah, get it. At the door, like, don't let her in, Josh. Right. Josh, that's enough.
Cut it out.
Cut it out.
Literally cut it out. And the
turn
is,
her away,
who
Josh.
Are you playing this music for? That's another thing. Like, go back to back. Remember when they have like government and they play like EDM and all that shit?
Yeah, yeah.
Like house music.
Mm-hmm.
Go back to that and see how much your club sells out. And then us have our own shit.
Yeah, the amount of times I've been to government, they had like that one room, which is like the hip hop room.
Right.
That room would always be turned to shit.
Always.
When I went, I don't know what regular, but
that's
when
like
I
Rebel.
Went, that the oh, I hate the purple room.
I hate
room
that place. But purple room is the only place that has people.
That's true. Or that weird like middle spot where everyone's just like humping each other and sweating. I'm like, I hate Rebel. I don't go there. I know. But yeah, you're right. The only rooms that pop are because that's what the music is for.
Right.
And they're made by black people. So it's like, why would you not want black people in the club? I just don't. And not, no one's saying, you know, like, don't let in anybody else, but it's like, come on.
Don't
like,
be, for you. I don't even, you don't even have to let in every black person, you know?
Yeah.
If you have a dress code, uphold the dress code. 100%. Make sure you uphold it equally, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the, what was that tweet? Like, they don't let Air Forces in.
But they'll let vans.
My nigga, you know how clean Air Forces are? Do you know how clean Air Forces are?
You won't let a black man in with the fresh out the box
no
Air Force Ones, no crease. Just put them on in the car. You won't let him in, but you will let Jeff or Jacob or Jake or whatever in with the, he just skateboarded here.
Right.
Because he got called last minute. He lives on King Street, brought his skateboard. He's going to leave it at the door in his dirty ass Vans, but he's allowed to come in his flannel open with a black t-shirt.
If you're going to have the dress code.
I feel like I just described someone so personal.
So specific. Lives on Augusta. No.
Yeah.
No, but that's the thing. Like, if you're going to have your dress code, have it across the board. You're going to have your minimum spend, whatever. Just don't discriminate, literally, racially. Yeah. That's all we're saying. Like, let the people that need to come in, let them in.
I feel like, and they tell you to come early, and girls will be, black girls will be there early, and still, you're not letting.
I'm not showing up early, bro.
No, I'm not showing up. For what,
am I clocking in to go to the club?
Exactly.
Six-hour shift? Are you paying me?
Why the hell am I coming here at 11?
And
are you out of your mind?
For paid to party, there's less black paid to party girls, by the way.
I feel like there's not, like, there's
are one.
There full,
she's light skin that I know.
Exactly. I say, are there any full black paid to party girls? Because I don't think so.
I don't think so, no.
Hmm.
So that's, yeah. Honestly, the Toronto scene, but now that we know, I mean, we've been knowing this.
Yeah. But and I, yeah, I'll definitely admit, I don't say I was blind to it, but there's a point where I was like, you know, I still,
you just
still
accept it.
Out.
You get to a point where you're
like,
I can go out.
Yeah.
I've never had problems because I'm going out with my homie or whatever.
Yeah.
But then it's annoying. And when you do run into that problem, or when you know somebody else is running into that problem, or when you see a homegirl and you're like, oh yeah, come in. And they're like, ah, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Wait, what?
Or they'd be like, oh, not her. And I'm like, wait, excuse me.
Then you realize you're the token.
Yeah, exactly.
You're, oh, I'm the token black girl. Damn.
And I feel like the reason I used to go to Lost and Found all the damn time. Every Monday
I was right there in the line.
Hello, hi, they know. And the thing is, we used to work with the bouncer at Lost and Found at the time. So his part-time job was bouncer and his daytime job was the job I used to work at. And he'd be like, yeah, you know, come in, I'll get you in, no problem. That was my in, you know what I mean? Because I knew him outside of his bouncer job.
Right.
So, but like I said, that was just me. But like, there will still be other, and I remember one time I tried to get like, I just, because like I saw them outside, it was cold. I tried to get two other black girls in and they were just like, nope. And I was like, bro, like, I know them. They're like, nope. And I was like, okay, that's how I understand now. Like, this, like, that's it. You either have to know someone or you have to be, like, super in some way. But if you just want, hey, I'm a black girl, I'm in for the night, I want to go to, I heard this club is lit, they're not letting you in.
No.
So fuck out of here.
So now that we know this, I mean, we've been doing this, but now that we've had these explosive conversations about it, called people out.
Yeah, you such agree. As Zoe. So me, you were dropping names.
Oh, in this episode? The only reason why I dropped her name.
Both of you were dropping names. That was lit.
I mean, whatever, right? Like, you made your bed, so lay in it. I really don't care. But, like, now that we've had these explosive conversations, I really better not see no niggas in line at Lost and Found. I promise you. I mean, I know there's always going to be, you know, some Uncle Toms out there.
The guy who perms his hair and swoops it to the left.
No, you know what it is? It's always the unsuspecting, like, random, like, rich Nigerian guy that's, like, not from here. And he's like, yo, we're about to spend my money. And it's like, no one told him, like, don't go there.
Yeah, you're right.
They won't treat you well. Do not go there. Yeah. And then they learn the lesson the hard way. But, like, now that we know Torontonians, we live here, we've had these conversations, like, we need to hold ourselves accountable. And it's a great time. Like, this is a gap in the market. We black people love going out. We love the entertainment industry. Everything has to do with it. What's missing is a safe space for us. And there's some places, Scenes Group, Caruza, whatever, like, there's places.
Yeah,
but
and like,
there's no club.
Like, Sunsets. I love Sunset Sundays. Like, that party at Anko. I know you've come with me a few times.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that, I feel like that is a safe space where I could, but I feel like they're outgrowing how
big
that party
is. Or, like, we love R&B.
Oh, love that party.
Love
yeah.
those. But those are, why are we just timestamps, right?
Right, once, yeah, exactly.
The one, the first Friday of the month, y'all niggas can come out. It's like, no, we need our club, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we need our own space, and y'all can keep it pushing over there.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not going to include us, we'll just have to create our own thing.
Yeah.
And I'm right. down for that.
Every good black party is like, yeah, like, you know, every last Saturday or every 3 months when we find a space we can afford. It's like, no, we need a consistent space where we can go and be safe and enjoy ourselves. Like, it's not that hard, but it's also hard because I know people who've tried to do it, but the
they'll reject the permits.
They reject the permits. You know, the cost of the space is sky high, way more than they can. You're staring at my lash.
Okay, I have an idea. If you truly believe you're an ally, this is the time. I want to open up this black club. You got all these black people that want to do it, but we need a we need a white name. We need a white name and a white face on the deed. So if you got good credit and a steady job and you actually care about black people, then we need you to be like our shadow owner, you know?
Yeah,
I agree. Spot. Or like if you're a lawyer and you're familiar with this type of work, like let's figure it out.
Yeah.
Make it happen.
Yeah. So moral of the story is cancel these clubs.
Canceled.
EFS, Lost and Found.
Lavelle.
Is Lavelle?
I've never had bad experiences, but they've gotten better, but I've definitely heard that they have like their dress code policy is made to exclude black people. So it'll be like very specific black things.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay, I know who you're targeting at this point.
We'll keep Lavelle on the maybe list, but Lost and Found EFS gotta go.
Honestly, I don't know. It'd be easier to name the safe ones, and the only one is Figures, but I mean, they are smart to partner up with a black person.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
And they even had a whole rebranding because Figures has been around for years, but we only started going in 2018, 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And that even then it wasn't really popping. And so I think they were smart to reach out to somebody black in the industry and look at what's happened for their company. Yeah. So that's proof that it works. And so if we can only name Figures, damn.
And all the ones that I can name clothes. Like ballet used to be ours. People used to hate ballet, but ballet used to be
ours. I love ballet.
I used to love ballet.
Fuck,
I
thought there was a good condo developer that
right
built
there was
over.
A good amount of black people in there. The music was pretty good. It was a small space, but I used to love going to ballet. I always had a pretty solid time at ballet.
And they always used to always get the 4 a.m. permits.
Always get the 4 a.m. permits
every day of the week.
Yeah,
it's allowed.
And like I said, it was one place where I could go and I could feel comfortable and I could feel welcomed, no matter who the promoters were, what the promoters were wearing, or they would welcome me in the booth. I mean, you don't have to do the whole like walk past, make eye contact. Like, you know, they'd be like, "Oh yeah, you come in." You know, you want a drink? Like, they were so welcoming. So, R.I.P. ballet, you will be missed.
You will pouring one out literally right now for you.
Exactly. But yeah, no, this was good.
I don't know. Should we touch on anything else? Do we miss anything?
I feel like we touched on everything.
Yeah, I think so.
Like, literally everything.
It's a lot to speak on being black, but, like, you know, there's only so much you can talk about.
Yeah, you're right, but we continue using this.
Anyone else you want to call out?
I feel like I should save that. No one at this moment that comes to my head, I feel like I need to call out or shout out for anything they've been doing, just besides, like, the family meeting being so good, and hopefully we stick to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think there's some good black spaces in Toronto that I want to shout out, if I may. So African Basket, which is an organization that's been around since the 90s. My mom told me about it, actually. But basically, it's like they address food insecurity, nutrition, and access for African, Caribbean, and black communities in the GTA. So they basically have like fresh produce that are made available to these populations. So that's really, really good. And then there's also BLACK, which stands for, let me make sure I got the right acronym here. So the Black Legal Action Center, it's a nonprofit that provides free legal service to black low-income families in Ontario. These are the places I personally have contributed to recently because, you know, the black community in Toronto is the closest one to me, right? So that's who I see every day, interact with, and that's who I want to uplift. And then that's also the organizations I sent out to my employers, telling them, if you really are about it, then here you go, step up. Like, this is where you can contribute, and this is where you can make a change. And the good thing is, if you are a 9-to-5 or work for a corporate company, most places will match any donations as long as it's with a registered organization. So anything I've donated, my company has matched. So
oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Or to a certain degree, mine's 100%, but some places match like 50%, whatever. Mm-hmm. But so I think most places is like that. You really have to ask about that in your workplace. But I encourage people to do that research. And if you don't have a lot of money, make sure your boss pays for it.
Yeah. And I think another one I think is also in Toronto. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is the Black Health Alliance. They're another big one, too. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
No, I haven't.
Big one. That's a really good to donate to.
For sure.
Research.
Yeah, because
I'm pretty sure they're definitely, if not Toronto, they're definitely in Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone knows, like, black people, especially black women, are ignored often in the medical industry. Mm-hmm. Leads to a lot of deaths or, yeah. Or,
you know, or even just, like, mental health in general. Another huge thing.
That's another huge topic.
We'll definitely save that one.
We'll
definitely unpack that one in another episode, for
like
sure.
Like, three, whole season on it.
Whole season on black mental health, no.
Yeah.
Well, this is good.
Thank
this
you for having good. Me.
Thank you for coming.
Yes.
You'll be here more often.
Pleasure. Yes, if the people want me, you know.
We'll test it out. See the reviews. I might not be back here after this. We never know.
Be like, damn, she's annoying as hell. The fuck? Or Christina will literally... People about to
you
boycott
can literally
me.
Not yeah they're gonna boycott you. You can literally they could even change their whole
trust aspect. Me I will never step foot in a club that Mr. Wolf like I can
I've never
name,
been to, honestly I've never been to I stopped either. Going out at one point because I never like Mr. Wolf is another one called what's the other one
Wild
Goldie never been to that one
I've been to that one
I don't think I have
but yeah no I'm not I don't intend on going to these places. I'm really serious about finding the space for black people that's no, safe in the entertainment industry that caters to us and like if anyone's in that world I would love to connect with them on that but
black people are fun yeah. Like we want to have a good time
we're literally so we, entertaining yes. Dog so entertaining
like the best like I don't get it
name me a song that doesn't have any black influence that's good
no
there is one even country songs country is made by black people rock made by black people so mm-hmm. Every Beatles song was stolen off of black artists so please please tell me.
Gonna piss the lights out. Yeah, oh god.
I mean, no, shaking I love myself too. Like, you know, yeah, I love my I love my Fall Out Boys. I love my Queen, but like still they're Pete Wentz by the way is half black. Queen. Did you know that?
Pete, the guy from Fall Out Boy? The lead singer?
Yeah, he perms his hair. I promise
he's
you.
He's not half black.
Google it.
Fact check that right now. Fuck out of here.
He's half black.
Pete Wentz? With the bang?
With the bang, bro. He perps his hair.
Clyde, are you checking that? Because there's no way. No.
Pete Wentz.
Is half black, Marie. I don't think. You're. Oh, come on. Are you understanding what half. Or maybe like a quarter? Because like, his mom, like half. What?
No. He has a black parent for sure. I don't know he how. Is?
She's right?
I am right. Hey, welcome to the club,
Pete. Welcome to the party. Welcome.
I know he gets a perm.
Oh, he has to get a perm or a serious silk press because I've never seen that hair is like, okay.
Yeah, I know. He's a black man.
Yeah, no, you're right, man. The thing is what I'll say is like.
His dad's Afro-Jamaican.
Even Jamaican.
Bumba, he's one of you.
A whole Jamaican man.
He's half Jamaican.
Half Jamaican. Still Jamaican, though. Jamaican blood runs through his veins.
Yep.
What?
No wonder he has rhythm. It explains why he's
yo,
so...
we will end that right there. Before we get Marie's Jamaican accent, which I promise you guys you don't want to hear, we will end that right
there. Oh, his name is Kingston? Bro, that
his name is not Kingston.
Scroll up. Peter Lewis Kingston.
Oh, yeah.
He's the third? That's the most Jamaican name ever.
Peter Lewis Kingston. Oh, wow. Welcome to the cookout, Pete Wentz.
Who was born in Illinois. Oh, wait.
Oh, my.
And his father's side. Okay.
Okay. Well, that was a good fact check.
There you go. Fall Out Boy is black.
Fall Out Boy is black. People are going to lose their minds.
Maybe that's the title.
Fall Out Boy is black. Yeah, no. Look at this picture right here. Like, he does not look.
But that does look like Yaki. Like, it's. Like his hair is coarse.
Yaki hair texture, you dumb. Get out of here. It's close to the Yaki brand. Get that, away.
That doesn't look like pin straight, you know? Like
it yeah, looks, it has look, a little texture.
Well, that's like,
right.
Yeah, no. He's
wow.
He is what
the
he is.
Things we learn every day. Anyways, the point is to end off the note, we are everywhere. Our influence is everywhere.
Yeah.
They fear us because they love us, man. That's really what it is.
Yeah.
And they want to be just like us.
Right. But we're not about to kill them with kindness. We're literally about to do it.
Anyone can get it.
Anyone can get it.
And that's it. Wow. Ending episode one. Do we have one of those things that you could... So, yeah. This was great. This has been the Relentless Diaries, hosted by yours truly, Zoe Smith, featuring episode one with Marie. And, yeah, I hope you guys liked it. Tune in, share, reach out to me. I answer my messages, I promise. I love to hear the feedback. So yeah, that's it. Peace out.